5:22, by the way. Invitation.
Well, thank you once again for the invitation to be here with you this weekend. I hope that the lessons that we have presented have been helpful in one way or another, have been encouraging, have been informative, enlightening. One of the reasons I am aware that you asked me to come down here this weekend is because of my recent trip to East Africa and my contact with one of the men that you helped support in Ethiopia, Brother Bedassa, which I was more than happy to do. And those of you who may not be aware that I do not preach full-time in any particular place anymore. I spend my time traveling to other congregations and to other places in the world, helping to train preachers. That's basically what I do. I train preachers domestically and internationally. I had a tremendous door opened to me and to my wife about 11 years ago, a door to the world, basically, literally, and it was to go anywhere that you wanted to go preach the gospel, which I'd never had before, and I know very few that have had that opportunity. I learned early on that it was a it was not the best use of time and money for an American preacher to get on a plane and fly halfway around the world, then drive for 2 days to go up to a village to preach a first principle sermon. That's not the best use of our time and money for a couple of reasons. One, they are a lot better preachers than we are. Not just because they know the language and the custom. Many of them, they're just flat better preachers than American preachers are. And they do the job. But the problem is that they have not had the tremendous advantage that we here in America have had over the last 120 years, where we have had extraordinary scholarship. Men who have studied the Bible, devoting their whole life to teaching and to publishing and to in-depth studies that we have had the tremendous privilege and advantage of being able to share with them, that these men in third world countries have not had. It's not that they're not intelligent. They're highly intelligent. But they don't have the legacy of Bible study that America does. America is not more righteous, it is not more spiritual, and it is not more intelligent. It has just had an extraordinary advantage in the window of world history in the last century or so. And what we're simply doing is just sharing it with these men. And I spent a month this last fall, in the month of October and part of November, going to East Africa, two countries in particular. I went to Mozambique and Ethiopia. Now, to give you just a little bearing on the map itself, Mozambique is down here in the bottom southeast corner of Asia. Here, let's see, is it the green or the blue? Neither one. Okay, there we go. Here's Mozambique right here. If you can see it, there's a little strip of another country, Malawi, that goes right in the middle of it. This area right here is just war-torn. It is, you know, I'm told that if a preacher lives long enough, he will begin to change some of his theological views. And I believe that's true, because after spending 10 days in Mozambique, I now believe in purgatory. It is the most desperate place in the world that I have ever seen or been to. And this is where we will be going here. To give you a little better idea, in Mozambique, there is the city of Tete. I flew into Johannesburg down here, but then flew up to Tete, which is just an airstrip in the middle of the desert. And we drove through Malawi up to Angonia. And I taught classes in both places here several days, and then came back to Johannesburg and flew up to Ethiopia for the last 2 weeks. And I'll show you pictures from both of these regions, and then up here in Addis Ababa, where Brother Bedassa lives and preaches here. This gentleman right here in the red shirt, his name is Samson Mafuta. He contacted the church in Fultondale, Alabama, where I've worked for the last several years. It's basically a suburb of Birmingham. And he was from Zimbabwe, and he contacted us and said, if you can give us some money, he said, I can cross over the border, move into Mozambique, and I believe that I can be effective in teaching a number of people and preachers. converting them. Now, here is why we went to Mozambique. 20 years ago in Ethiopia, some of you are aware of the circumstance. The institutional churches of America had reached out far and hard on the churches in Africa. And the preachers in Ethiopia began to feel the weight of the heavy hand of oversight of elders in Los Angeles in particular, who were beginning to tell the people what they must do. You need to go here and do this and do that. And they thought, wait a minute, do they have the right to do that? And some Christians from America that moved there had an opportunity to teach them about the independent church. And they said, what's that? We never heard of that. And they opened up their New Testament and showed that in the New Testament, every congregation was independent of the other congregations. No one congregation could come over or send anyone over to tell another congregation what to do. And when they saw that, the lights went on, the eyes opened, and it just took fire. And that is the primary reason for the extraordinary growth in Ethiopia for the last 12, 15 years. Now, what happened in Ethiopia 20 years ago is happening right now in Mozambique. It is in the very beginning stages. This brother right here, Brother Mafuta, there's another brother, he's off camera, that we help support. Both of them had recently been fired by their local congregations that they worked with because they began to teach the New Testament pattern of an independent church. Now, they have basically put their livelihood on the line and have lost it. So their commitment is unquestioned. But these other men in this picture are also preachers, and they are curious, what is going on here? So one of the brothers at the congregation where I had worked, his name is Ron Rourke, you'll see his picture in a moment, he's preached the gospel for almost 50 years. And he went over there a couple of years ago, initially contacted these people, came back, contacted two other people in Birmingham, and now there's about five or six of us that are going over there to Mozambique. And they're the only ones that I know. There are many that go to Ethiopia, but there's just a small handful that go to the entire nation of Mozambique. And this gentleman here is one of the reasons why. We had about 65, 70 preachers here for those days. This building that you're looking at, they built it the week before we got there. Ron sent them a little money, and they said, we'll find the brick, we'll get the mud, we'll get some wood, and we'll build some timbers and all. And they built that building. It's not finished yet, obviously. They got some wood and built some benches, and that's where we met and where we studied. And this is Brother Ron on the right here, and with two of the interpreters. There are four dialects in Mozambique, and they're all based with Portuguese. Mozambique was founded by Vasco da Gama, and it's Portuguese. So Portuguese is the national language, and there's some various dialects of that. And this brother in the middle with the pink shirt, he's the other preacher that we helped support who lost his job preaching the truth. So we're over there helping them, and this is one of the days. Ron and I would take turns, and we'd teach. It would break for lunch, and we'd take turns in the afternoon and teach. Down there, it is the middle of the summer. It was extremely hot and dry, and it is a nasty, disease-ridden, filthy place. I wouldn't take anybody there if I'd had to, unless I just had to. It's just a horrible, terrible, desperate place. I can't describe that enough. The preachers that came from all around, Ron bought some tents, and they lived in those tents. And we used those tents later when we went up to Angonia. We rented this little truck for the week where we could all pile in and drive up to Angonia the next week. They're staying in these tents. And in those tents, when we got up further north, they were so hot. By 6:30 in the morning, you had to be out of the tent. You couldn't stay in there. Everything cooked. And you couldn't go back into the tent until about 6:30 that night. It was just too hot to stay in there. So basically, when we weren't teaching, it was just a pursuit of shade. Here are some of these men here during one of the breaks. Let's see if we can get this here. Here, we break for lunch, and they're lining up to wash their hands. Some local women got together, and we gave them some money to buy some food, and they fixed food, lunch, for these fellas for those 3 days that we had met. And that's corn that they're cooking. They called it maize. It's like a real cheap poor man's cornbread. They just cook it, and boil it, and then it dries into kind of a cake. And I was, those of you who've been around me here, some of them know me from my life. You know, I like to tease with people, love to laugh. And during one of the breaks, I came out there and I was watching them cook. And I started talking to them. They were curious about me. And I said, yes, I live in America. And I have five wives. And they look, and this woman that is bending over here on the right, in perfect English, she turned to me and she said, "You do not have five wives." You caught me. they're very happy people. This is the buffet, the lunch that they ate. You see, they just take kind of a wad of cornbread, put it in their dish, and that's goat that they have boiled. And then they put goat, and then that's just plain old pinto beans, like your grandma made. And they just put beans and goat on that cornbread. And really, that's for Mozambique. This is really a good meal. So they didn't have any trouble eating, and they ate a lot, but then, of course, it needed a little salt, and that's what this is. A woman brought a bag of crystals. She would put them in that little cup there, and then with that long rod, she would twist it and, you know, grind it into a powder, and that's the, they would reach in and get a pinch of salt to put it on their food if they wanted to. Of course, they're all sitting in the shade, because this town reminded me so much of Tucson, Arizona. I was born in Tucson, and though you may know, it looked like Tucson. It was dry and hot and nasty, and it had that red adobe brick that Tucson has, and they had similar mesquite trees. They had Palo Verde trees. They even had cactus. It was just a really a different place to on the face of the earth here, and they're all broke there. The thing that caught my attention was that many of these guys came with long sleeve shirts, ties, and suit coats, and it was hot. Here are some of the boys that are out there playing. I saw this in several places in Mozambique. These are their radio control cars. Without the radio and without the control, but they got an antenna here. It's basically just wire that they have bent into the frame, and they get a little piece of wood and make an axle and make wheels, and they push those things around, and that's their toys. And this fella had a steering wheel. And I'm very curious to see this. They're very happy. You know, you do with what you have. And they had seen pictures of radio control cars. So they made one. And that's their version of it. And the faces of the children in Africa, I have got in my library scores of them. Some of these faces, look at that. That's a face that is just so intriguing to me. It's just their eyes. I first year I went to Ethiopia, I told one of the preachers, "Oh, I can understand why Moses married a woman from Ethiopia." And I saw a few of the girls and I thought, that's probably what Cleopatra looked like as far as her eyes were concerned. They're just, they're really stunning. This tree, I still don't know what the name of it is. They told me several times, I couldn't repeat it, but they said, this is the elephant's favorite tree. And these trees are all over Tete. And I thought, well, there's no leaves to speak of. They can't eat on that thing. And you imagine, you think why an elephant would like this tree? Yeah, if you're a 9-ton animal and you've got an itch on your backside, what can you rub up against that won't fall down? This is the only thing that would stand up to an elephant scratching himself. So that's what you see there. That pile on the right is what's left over of the bricks that they made to build that little building. It's just adobe. And I went over, looked at it, saw a little straw, and I thought, I remember this from Sunday school and the lessons on the Israelites, you know, in Egypt, making brick. It was just like that. Well, when we finish there in Tete, the next week we're getting ready to load up and head up to Angonia here. And this is our driver sitting on top. He's a Christian. He's a preacher, as a matter of fact. And he was going to drive for us, and we just piled. By the time it's done, I think there's about 65 people in this truck, it seems like. It is just, you know, if there's an open space, somebody jumps on, and it's just piled on, and it's just like a human glob of people going down the road. And that's Ron. He's showing them how to tie everything down here, getting ready to hit up. And we finally get up there late that night, and this is the next day, preaching to these people. And these people live in the most desperate place I have ever seen. One interesting thing about this region right here, the men sat on one side, the women and children sat on the other. The men sat on benches, women sat on grass mats. One day we were studying the curse in Genesis 3, Genesis 4, the woman, her desire shall be for her husband, etc. And I said, notice this, the men are sitting on benches and the women are sitting on grass mats. The men kind of giggled nervously. And the women were stoic. They didn't give any expression. They were sitting there. I know inside they were going, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very chauvinistic in their culture and how they were. Here we're taking a break again. I just can't imagine those guys wearing those coats and ties in that weather. And this was the most desperate. These fields behind there, they were burning all the fields. Because it was late summer, all their crops had been taken in and they had been eaten. They've eaten everything they could grow. Don't let that green leaf on a banana tree fool you. There's no fruit. It's gone. And so they began to burn their fields, burning their fields so that the mice would burrow down to get away from the fire. But by their burrowing, they would mark a path of where they were. They would burn the field and come back and find the mouse, dig them up and eat them. That's what they were living on at that time. And that was just widespread everywhere. Here's some of these hot tents that we stayed in here. And then we were going back through, and I just took a few pictures outside the window. One reason I took this picture is I wanted you to see the scale. See these people standing right over here. And you know what this is right next to it? They were everywhere by the hundreds. Ant hills. These are African ants. Their ant hills were 5-6 feet high. I didn't encounter one, didn't want to. But this very typical, just desolate, dry desert. I took this picture because this is the airport where we flew into. This is just a strip out there. Just to the right of this was the plane waiting for us. I mean, it's just a little concrete building, and you just go out there and you get on the plane and they drop you off there. But one of the preachers was pointing this out to me, and he said, see this building right up here? He said, just a couple of years ago when they had their war, he said, this was the most dangerous place in all of Mozambique. The rebels were sitting up there on the top with rifles, and anyone who walked out in here was dead. There were dead bodies out there all the time. They were just killing people. No matter who it was, they're walking out there, they're dead. Just a desperate place. Well, I left Mozambique after 2 weeks and went up to Ethiopia, and I'm going to tell you frankly, it was like going to Hawaii. It was wonderful. I got into the capital city. There was a clean bed, clean food. Oh, I had 2 days, or I had a day and a half to recuperate, and I thought, okay, now we're ready to go out. This is good. I can deal with this. I gave this report last year in Phoenix to a congregation there, and this young lady on the left, she saw the report in Ethiopia, and she walked up to me afterwards, and she said, I'm going with you. Next time you, she didn't ask me. She told me, I'm going with you. I said, well, if you can find another young lady, and this lady on the left is Lauren and Chelsea. And Chelsea, I've known her family since, I've known her grandparents since I was just very, very young. And Chelsea is a neonatal nurse in Orlando, Florida now. And Lauren is a social worker, and they wanted to come. And the man on the right is Big Z. He said, just call me Big Z. This is Zerahun. This guy is, to me, is one of the most precious fellas in the whole world. He would be one of my dearest friends if we could live close together and be with each other a lot. When he came to the hotel before I left, he just cried and cried. He's just a tremendous guy. He is the key man. Without him, I think a lot of the work would suffer in many ways. Anyway, this is Zerahum, and he was traveling with us. We rented this Jeep, got a great deal, got it for 10 days for $600. That's a deal because it comes with a driver. And they'll take you wherever you want to go. These are the same companies that, you know, big game safaris and stuff like that. And for $60 a day, and they drive you hundreds of miles and take you out there, and you don't have to drive. Great. That's a deal. Because some places it's more. But anyway, that was our mode of transportation during that while. And here we are in Hosanna, where we have gathered. And this is particularly gratifying to me. Because the number of preachers, and myself included, in the years past, we've always brought money over and paid for their way to come, because it's no small sacrifice to leave your job or leave your crop or leave your field, these preachers, and travel a long way. They don't just live right down the road. Travel a long way. Come there for 3 days and feed them and house them and teach them and rent the room, etc. When I resigned from full-time preaching last year, I told Zerahun, I said, tell all these guys, I don't have any money. I'm not bringing any money. Now, if they really want to study, they told me before that they would come at their own expense. Now we're going to see. And I really didn't know how many were going to show up. It's the biggest crowd I'd ever had at Hosanna. All of these men came at their own expense to come and study the Word of God for 3 days. So it was just personally, it was very humbling. And I told them how much I appreciated. And there's more men off camera, but that's just one that I could take. And then we're outside, and I wanted to take a picture of just the girls in Zarahun, but they all started coming in. Everybody wants to get in the picture, and that's just a kind of an idea of some of the fellows there. This is the view from my room, the presidential suite, at this hotel that's $6 a day. This is the bus terminal right outside your window that opens at 4:30 a.m., and everybody and their chickens are on that bus. And behind that, you can see the prayer tower. This thing goes all night, and it's just an open mic PA for anybody who wants to pray, sing, do whatever they want to do, and it's crazy. This is my favorite part of being out in the villages, taking pictures of these young people that come. Their faces just are just so pure, and I love their faces, love their smiles. And Lauren, she saw me do this, and she got right into it. She got her camera, and she came out, and she started taking pictures, too. And I said, this is a great way. A friend of mine showed me. He said, bring a digital camera, take their picture, turn around, and show it to them. They laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh when it's their buddy on there. But when they see themselves, without exception, they're speechless. They don't say a word. They don't even breathe. They're just looking at their digital image of themselves. And they've never seen anything like that. All their buddies around them laughing or slapping their shoulder, and they're just staring at that screen. So digital camera is a great tool to take over there as icebreaker. Walk up to it, take their picture, show them, and they love it. And then pretty soon you've got 200 kids around you wanting to get their picture taken, and it happens every time. And here are some of the young men, you see the young ladies in the back there. So Lauren and Chelsea started getting their camera. I took this picture for their parents' benefit so they could see. They're taking the ladies and the children off to teach in this little building right here. This was the village where they just got absolutely overwhelmed because this room just filled up quick with all of the women and all of the children. And I gave them a quick tip. I said, stay close to a door so you can get out and breathe, because sometimes if it's a room like this, I remember preaching in a room very similar to this size, except it was just adobe. There was no windows except one window on the side and a door in the back. And I ended up standing, and this is not an exaggeration. I had about a 3-foot square, and I was teaching the whole room right from here. All day long, 4 interpreters. Good grief, this is just going on. You know, it just went on and on and on and on. And outside, there were another 100 people outside, hanging in the windows and the doors, walked outside. There were about 500 people there. And I preached all day long. And I teased one time, everybody said, okay, I'm done, readily. And oh, they got upset. No, 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 no. Oh, they were upset. No, sit down. You know, we're not done yet. I said, okay, so you better bring plenty of material to teach all day. And that's just the way it is. It just overwhelms you. Betty has been there a couple of times. She knows well what it is like. Here's a village out here, one of the villages where we went and taught, and where the girls are getting ready to teach. You can recognize Brother Alamu there next to Lauren. I know Betty knows him, and next to him, Brother Demica. I wish I had time to tell you about this guy. This guy is really an incredible fella. In many ways, what he's been able to do with 10 children, a farm, and he went to a region of Asara that was patriated about 3 years ago. It's literally the end of the road. He took public transportation as far as it would go, and then he started walking. But in this area, he had to be careful because of the lions. So he had to stay out of the valleys because there's lions there at night. They lock up their children, their livestock, everything is locked up at night because they can hear the lions outside. If they leave a cow or a chicken out, it's gone. So everything's locked up. So their cows are basically in their living room. You walk in their living room, there's stalls. And that's just, you know, how they live. Because these are, you know, prime assets that they've got to protect. They can't afford to lose them to the lion. Well, this guy walked out there, fell, and broke his back. He's laying out on the side of the mountain. Word came out that he broke his back. They came out and got built a little gurney, put him on it, took him to the village, and he had to stay there a couple of weeks for his back to heal. And while it healed, he converted the village. Just a tremendous guy. Stories like that all the time. Here they are. They're Alamu and Demica are translating for the ladies there as they're teaching the women in that scene. And here's another picture. The weather there is beautiful. Mozambique, hot, dry, miserable. Ethiopia, I'm going to tell you, I know, having lived in Southern California, there's not another place like this. If there is, it's Ethiopia. The weather in Ethiopia is ideal. It's cool and dry and wonderful. It'll rain occasionally. It rains here every once in a while, doesn't it? but it is just a wonderful. I just wear shirt sleeves and that's it. And it's just a very pleasant, lovely. Matter of fact, the girl there, Chelsea, on the far right, last year she went to Scotland on a tour of all of the highlands of Scotland. And what our first day out in the countryside, she said, "You know what? This is prettier than Scotland." And I never would have believed it. Ethiopia, more beautiful than Scotland? It's certainly bigger than Scotland. And the mountains are as big, and it's just as green, if not greener. Beautiful place. This is Ancha. This is the congregation where this old gentleman here is leading the singing. He's singing the first part of a verse, and the people are singing the second part of Psalm 136. And he's just going on and on, and it's... Their singing is different, and I hope I can plug something up here and show you here in a minute how different it is. Here's some of the ladies. They're teaching the ladies, and I'm over teaching the men. Again, same situation here. These men all came at their own expense. Didn't pay them a dime. When I went, several of these men are all denominational preachers that have been converted. When I first went there several years ago, there were only three of them that were being supported, and that was $50 a month. That's it. The rest of them were all preaching. All doing a wonderful work, didn't have a dime of support. Didn't have a dime. They're all, didn't matter. Quite a few conversions happened from them. Here we are leaving here, these pictures I'd taken for them. These last group of preachers that we met with on the last day in this one little village here, we were teaching here, and the girls were sitting there, and I told Chelsea, "Be still, quiet." You know, these children are reaching through the fence. You see what they're doing? They're stroking Chelsea's hair. They've never seen it, and they're stroking. At first, she was startled. I said, just be real still. Let me just take your picture. They were just so curious about these girls here. Very fun, and they taught the kids here. And so we're going on. Here's my favorite part of the trip to Ethiopia. I go out and teach in Ozana with the preachers there and in Owassa. Then we get back to the capital city, and this is the Church of Kotobe. And usually there are about 25 preachers who speak English, and I spend 2 days in-depth studies without a translator. They know what I'm saying. And so this is my favorite part. And here are some key men there. You see Zerahun there. But the man in the red, this is Brother Badassa that you helped support. And here he is at one of our sessions. And he brought some other gentlemen here with him. The man in the far right, the sitting up on that chair, he's Brother Doyamo. He's crippled. He can't walk. He can have a person help him walk a little bit. This guy has probably been responsible for more conversions than any other preacher in that room. He's just, and again, I've spent a lot of time with him traveling and preaching. He converted over 24 denominational preachers, just himself. And from those men alone, they have converted, I would say, close to 4,000 people just within the last 2 years. 2 years within the last 3 years. Some wonderful things going on there. You are a part of it. And Brother Badassa has grown this congregation, and I was able to meet with him last year, and this is the congregation where Brother Badassa preaches. But I don't believe they're in this room anymore, because when I took this picture, he said, "We're going to have to move out pretty quick outside." Because they've grown, and I noticed in his report, there's 88 members there now. When I was there, there was about 60. There may be close to 100 now, and he's got a couple of more men that are working with him that he's trying to help get some support for, because they're going to help the work. And that little area where he's at, and he's on the far side of the capital city. It takes over an hour to drive out there where he's at. It'd be like here we are in Orange County, and you're going to drive to Santa Barbara. That's how far it is to get to where he's at. They're doing very well, very, very well. I want to commend you in your work there. Now, very quickly, and I was asked to do this, and I'm going to give you just a few pictures from Russia, where I just came from a couple of weeks ago, if this thing will open up here. As I say, a door opened, and we were able to go to Ethiopia and to Mozambique. And now I'm the only one of several of us that used to go to Russia, and I'm going there now three times this year, Lord willing. I just came back 2 weeks ago. We'll go again in May, and then we'll go again in September. And I'm bringing different preachers with me to expose these men to the gospel. And this is just a picture of the apartment that we rented, and we'll rent this apartment. And within that apartment, they will, you know what, I just realized I'm in another programmer. Excuse me, and we'll open this up and do it this way. And we rent this apartment for $67 a day. Four preachers stay in it. And then in the morning and afternoon, we have our Bible studies in here. And it's really convenient. It's about four or five blocks from the hotel where I stay at. And this just gives you an idea. And these pictures are not in order. So I apologize for that. It's just when they came off my camera. This is the view out the window. It was below zero, a couple of feet of snow on the ground, but it's just as dry as dust. You pick up the snow and it just, you couldn't make a snowball to save your life in it. It's just so dry. But it was beautiful. I walked through a park to get back to the hotel, and I felt like I was in the movie set of Dr. Zhivago, for those of you who are old enough to remember that. These are some of the preachers here. There's four of them. I'll give you a better picture in a moment. They're in the kitchen. I brought cans of chili. They'd never heard of it, didn't know what it was. Last year, Rennie and I brought two or three cans of Hormel chili, and they opened up, and the women went, ooh, ooh, we like this. So this year, I brought several cans of chili, and they're all opening up for lunch, and they, ooh, they like it. This guy on the right here with the dark sweater, he says, too many beans. So I brought him some chili without beans. This lady on the right, her name is Lena Samova. She is a Christian who was our translator, has been our translator for a number of years. First year we used her, we baptized her in the bathtub of our hotel, and she is a member of the church there at Oriole and is a wonderful person and is really a very first-rate translator. And this gentleman on the left, Sasha Alexander, but the nickname is Sasha. He was a jazz pianist before he became a Christian, and I was telling some folks at lunch today, he learned English from Beatles songs. And most of these guys can speak pretty good English. They may have a little bit. A couple of the fellows have some trouble with it, but they all learn it. And that's quite common in Russia. They have learned English from music. Western music is predominant in Russia. Over 50% of the songs on the radio are all Western American music. The signage, I'll recognize about 20% of it's all English. Lest anyone not understand completely, they love America. Russians, I'm not talking about the government, I'm not talking about Kremlin. Russians love America. They love America. They love English. They love to speak English. They hear you speak English. They want to talk to you. They want to know all about you. How did you get here? Why are you here? What's going on? And not in any kind of ominous way. There is just an honest curiosity. And so now I used to, you know, worry about it. Just open up and speak English everywhere, and someone bound to come up to you, tap you on your shoulder, said, "Where are you from?" It's a great situation. This is Dennis. This is the guy who taught the lesson I mentioned last week, or yesterday, or last night, or whenever it was. I've lost track of time this weekend. On adoption, this is the guy that gave the lesson on adoption. He's probably the most seasoned preacher there. Great fella. And here he is giving that lesson. He and his wife have a little boy. They used to believe that children were a luxury. 5 years ago, only one of them had a child. And I began to talk to him. I said, "You need to have children." And I could hear them talking among themselves, but I didn't understand what was going on. And Lena said, "You know what they're saying? They're saying, sure, that's easy for you to say. You rich Americans can afford children." And so I said, "Dennis, I see you have a new digital camera. Oh, you have a new laptop. Ah, you have a new cell phone. You can't afford a child?" I said, "In my country, in my parents' generation, if they waited to afford children, they would never have children. My parents' generation, everyone had big families and nobody had any money. It didn't stop them. They were poor, but they were prosperous with their children." Explained to them this principle. It has since caught on, and now the government will give Russian couples an extra financial stipend for a second child. they realized all of a sudden that, you know, there's not too many children around here, and now this is going to hurt us. We got to catch up to the world. So now there's children everywhere. You can see them. This year in the snow, here came the baby strollers. They knocked the wheels off and put on ski runners, and they were just going down. And children everywhere. I thought, wow, boy, what a change in 5 years. It's been dramatic. This is Andre, who is the preacher there in Oriole, and he is teaching. This is the view out of my hotel window. Here's a little better view of the square. Every major town will have a square. Red Square is in Moscow. We're familiar with that. This is the square where they have their Victory Day parades and the tanks and all of that stuff, just like we've seen, you know, back in the 60s and the Cold War and all that stuff going on. One of the preachers that we helped support who lives down in Odessa was a tank driver in the Red Army. And I was very curious, asking him, you know, what was that like? And he said, what that meant was every May Day, that is May 9th, when they had Victory Day, they would pull this tank out of mothballs. They would fire that thing up. I would drive it down the Red Square. And then once we got out of the square, they would load it up on the flatbed trailer and take it back to storage again. That's what he did. He said everything was a facade for show. They just, you know, crumbled from within. And he was, this is 9 o'clock in the morning. It's dark as can be up there until about 9:30. And this is a little Christmas tree that they have out there in the square. It was just a beautiful little place. This is the church in Oriole. There's all kinds of stories to these people. We don't have time to tell you all of them. But they are a warm, gracious people, and you can ask Dewey. This is one of our favorite places to go in Russia. You go into this home, and they are genuinely happy to see you. They are warmly affectionate. And worship there is for hours. They'll have their worship service, and then when it's finished, everyone stays. They have tea. They have some cookies or some cakes or some bologna. Bologna is big. That's the number one. You go on, everyone has bologna. Bologna is the national the food there. It really is. Bologna and crackers. Crackers and bologna. These are just some of the people there. Great stories. Every one of them. Here are some of the other. There's some children and women here on the side. And I don't have everybody in these pictures here. But I have told Andre, the man holding the little boy, that's his little boy Daniel, telling these men, in Ethiopia, it's harvest time. We are reaping the harvest. Conversions are everywhere. The planting has gone on for decades, and the harvest is obvious everywhere. But in Russia, it's the other way around. It's planting season in Russia. There's not a lot of harvest yet, but we're planting. And they now have, they trust us, they understand. They had some pretty big hurdles to get past as far as concepts of absolute moral authority. The corruption of the Russian government affected their thinking about religion in general. The Russian Orthodox Church is corrupt to the core. Everyone knows it. Therefore, they conclude that all religion is corrupt. And we have to get past that. And once they get past that and see that, they're genuinely converted to the Lord. They want something better than what they have right here. But they realize that they have to be careful of what they say in public, because it is still against the law to indoctrinate a child religiously. It is against the law for you to teach a Bible story to someone else's child. You have to be. Religion is not for children. The Russian Orthodox Church is made up primarily of women. A few men go, but mostly women, and no children. Children just don't go to religion. It's not for children. They don't go to church. So I'm telling them, you may not be able to open the door to Russia, but it may be that your son is the preacher in 25 years that unlocks the key that now God opens the door to Russia. Because a lot can happen in 25 years. A lot can happen, not just here, but a lot can happen over there. In the next couple of decades, who knows what the Lord will work. And these men are just simply stewards who are waiting to work. I'm sorry, I pushed the wrong button here. They're waiting to help and to... I still don't know how to work this thing. Okay, and waiting to teach. This is his wife, Kate, over here on the left. And a couple of the other children there. Great, great stories. I wish I had time to tell you all about them. This little girl on the right, 19 years old. When we first went, she was 10. She was 9 Dewey taught her in her very first class. Now she's all grown up, and I took that picture of her for Dewey's sake to see her. You know how a little 8-9-year-old girl in 10 years, they grow up. This is another picture outside my hotel window looking at the square. These people are walking around, and just a great place. Dima, the preacher in Moscow, he's giving his lesson, and we are all critiquing it. I told you I would lecture in the morning, and then the afternoon they would each give a topical, then a textual lesson. And it's good because the men themselves critique each other, and they learn, and their preaching begins to improve dramatically. And this is what they're doing. And Sasha is saying something funny, got Lena tickled there. And they're just normal people. They're not weird. They're Russians, but they have the same sense of humor, the same fears, the same concerns, the same hopes, and they have the same faith because they believe in the same God. Now, I'm going to get out of this here, and I'm going to hopefully be able to show you one more thing here that I promised Ken that I would do here, that in this library I did take a video of the brethren in Mozambique who were, I'm sorry here, see if I can get this right here, in Mozambique before I got to Ethiopia of a worship service, and here it is, and your system will play it. This is a small group in Tete, Mozambique, and this is what I was able to take. All right, now I've got one more. That was early that morning, baptized three people there. And then that afternoon, we went up on top of this hill where this congregation was. This is the Lord's table, worshiping, and they started singing. And I quickly reached into my backpack and got my camera out towards the end of the song because the song was so beautiful. And here's just the last part of the song. That's what I've been doing the last couple of months. And I'm going to tell you, it's a wonderful thing. And it's a tremendous blessing to be able to worship with God's people outside of the parameters of an American church building. I am not demeaning the blessings we have. We have extraordinary blessings to be able to come here out of the rain and be able to come to a place that's air-conditioned and heated, etc. We all understand that and know that. But it does something to your spirit to worship with a child of God who doesn't look like you, who doesn't talk like you, who doesn't live like you, and who does not have the culture that you do, but shares the same faith that you do. Isn't that what we're teaching our little children in Sunday school? Jesus loves all the children of the world. Yeah, that's what we are. We're children. You know, we humble ourselves. We submit ourselves to the Lord. Red, yellow, black, and white, they are precious in His sight. Jesus loves the children of the world. And these are children.
And we're children, and there's more children. And we're just looking to bring more children to the Lord. I commend you for your support of Brother Bedassa and of other people who are trying their best to help spread the borders of the kingdom, whether it's Orange County, whether it's Tete, Mozambique, or Bureme, Addis Ababa. We're here for a short while. We do what we can. When we're finished, Lord, take us home. If you're here tonight, you're not a child of God. We extend the invitation to you to be a part of that family. Won't you come while we stand and sing?